Okay.
Taste of dead animals in their mouth.
So, since we are now going on Pesach break, so it's worth talking about Shir HaShirim for a bit, which we read when all of you going in Chutz La'aretz. It's easy. You do it on the eighth day because it's Shabbos. I actually don't even know what we read here. Because normally it's either Shabbos Chol Moed or the eighth day, which we have neither this year in Israel. So I think we do it on the seventh day. What?
Yes.
No. I'm saying, but in Chutz La'aretz, they'll do it on Shabbos on the eighth day. Here, I assume we do it on the seventh day, but I don't know. Because the eighth day is already Ishruchak, right?
It's
Ishruchak. The seventh.
It's on
the last day of Yom Tov. It's Friday, not Thursday. It's on the first day of Pesach? Oh, I don't know. Whatever, I don't know. Someone's going to tell me on the recording what day it is. It doesn't matter. If someone listens, I'm like, they do it on the first day? Fine, the shrine, the first day. Okay, that's Shabbos. Fine.
Yeah,
fine. Okay, fine. Anyways, why do we read Shir HaShirim on Pesach? Nobody knows. They give all types of reasons why we do all these. It could be because the imagery is spring oriented. It could be because the mashal has to do with the relationship of God and the Jewish people at the initial stages of their relationship. To talk about on Pesach, who knows? Whatever it is, but the minhag is we do it. It's nice. The point is, we're going to be reading it, so you might as well understand it a little bit. Okay? So, Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim was a shtickle controversial already in the time of Chazal, right? As the Mishnah records, there was a machloket about whether Shir HaShirim was ever, whether there was a machloket about whether it should be canonized or be metame yadayim, whatever exactly was going on there. Because canonized books are metame yadayim. The reason they're metame yadayim is because they didn't want people to store the books near truma, which would then encourage mice to come and eat the truma and eat the kizvei kodesh. Made part of Tanakh, made part of the canon. And the reason, right now, so the Mishnah tells us that there was a machlokas about this, and then, you know, Rabbi Kiva says, God forbid, there was never such a machlokas. Shir HaShirim is Kodesh Kadoshim. It is the holiest of the holy. So don't even, right, don't suggest that there was ever a Hava Amina that would not be part of Tanakh. So, let's discuss Shir HaShirim. So Shir HaShirim in Pshat, right?
Love story.
I mean, Pshat,
which is obviously
not in what it meant in the Rishonim time, but it means now. But yeah, parenthetically, in the time of the Rishonim, Pshat meant? Wrong. Mashma'ut. Right, when Rashi says Pshuto k'mashma'o, Mashma'ut is literal translation. And when there is no deeper translation, it is Pshuto k'mashma'o. Right? That the way it sounds is what it is. Pshat is like the meanings. I don't mean that. I mean mashmud. Right? Literal, what are the words? It's a love story. Right? It's a love story between... Yes. Yeah, Ellie was correct. Ellie's correct. Now, there is this odd move by Art Scroll. That Art Scroll, unlike every other book in Tanakh, which it has a literal or at least a Rashi-based literal translation, that wasn't a joke. It's literal. That's just what it does.
The Tav's allegorical rendering following Rashi.
Yeah. So in general, they follow Pshat, but like when there are questions about how to read a word, they follow Rashi's interpretation.
Yes.
Right? On Shir HaShirim, they say, "Oh, we follow Rashi because there is no Pshat. There is only." Drash.
No.
You can read me their introduction.
Because in the bottom they have notes, including phrase by phrase, literal.
No, I don't mean on the notes. What they have an introduction is why they do this, right? Someone can. By the way, can you pass me a Shir HaShirim? Shua, can you pass me a? Whatever.
All right. This question is perfection if Shir HaShirim is taken literally for a previous song of uncommon passion. Is he that a place among scripture books?
Uncommon passion. That's a great way of saying. Sensuality that makes us uncomfortable. But fine. Yeah, okay.
Moreover, some of these sages wonder whether Kohala should have included in the book of scripture. There's never a question about Shir HaShirim. To both these sages of the Talmud and the classic commentators, it was clear that the Shir HaShirim is an allegory, a duet of longing between God and Israel. That is why it is read publicly during Pesach, the time when Israel became God's people.
Fine.
The original Saturday doesn't mean that every commentator finds new themes in people's words. All you remember, the truth of the Shir HaShirim is to be found only in its allegory.
Good. So they quote Rashi, and Farshim is saying that we introduce Shir HaShirim and we only give you the allegorical interpretation because the pshat is obviously so offensive. Right? I want to read you just the introduction to Rashi, the first line. First line of the Rashi's Hakdamah Shir HaShirim. Mikra achad yotzei lekama tamim. Every pasuk has different ways of being understood. Bisof davar. And the upshot of it all is Ein lecha mikra yotzei midei mashma'o. A pasuk does not lose its literal interpretation. And even though the Nevi'im speak in allegory, first you need to understand the psukim in order. Right? As they understand. He said, "Ra'it l'sevar is a common midrash agadah." Admittedly, there are many midrashic interpretations. Yeshiv calls every midrash acher, Yeshiv reserves common sefer agadah, etc. The ein mityashvin al lashon hamikra v'seder mikraud, and it doesn't follow pshat. V'amarti bilibi litvos mishma mikraud, and therefore I have said to understand the literal interpretation of the pesukim liyashay piyorama l'seder.
That's hilarious.
Anyways, v'ein midrash midrash. And then the Midrashim, I will explain pasuk at a time. Okay, so I'm done. Rule of life. Distinction between pshat and mashma'ut, or pshat and drash, whatever you want to call it. Right? Even if you accept Chazal's contention that Shir HaShirim is not meant to be understood literally at all, in the sense that this is not a passionate love story of human beings, right? That the allegory, metaphors, need to be understood, the image needs to be understood before you can get to the pshat, right? So it is important to understand Shir HaShirim a little bit in its literal interpretation so that you understand what is trying to be conveyed and why it's being conveyed in the way that it is at its deeper levels. Okay? So there are what I would say three levels to Shir HaShirim. One is pshat, which is, right, the love story, which again, I don't mean pshat pshat like that's just what the words mean.
Yeah.
Right? Not what it means.
Yeah.
Right? Now, then, and Rav Lichtenstein used to say, there is a machlokas amongst the mefarshim. What is the allegory of? So the mefarshim divided into two camps. Either it is
God and Bnei Israel.
Right. God and, well, that's going to be level two. Right? God and Bnei Israel. And what's the other allegorical level?
God and mankind.
No, God and the individual Jew. Right, meaning, is this a book about God and the people of Israel, or God and Jews? Right? Now, Rav Lichtenstein used to say, it's both. Just like that well-known Christian allegory, the Fairy Queen. Sure. So if you ever look it up, the Fairy Queen, or something, I think that's what it's called. It's some Christian allegorical book, which is meant to be read at two levels, both as an allegory of God and human being, individual people, and God and nations. So there are three levels to Shir HaShirim. There's a pshat, right? The love story between the Dod and the Raya. And then there are the two allegorical levels that each, you know, some of the Mefarshim take this, some of the Mefarshim take this, some say it's about God and an individual Jew, some say it's about God and Bnei Yisrael. As Wilkinson pointed out, there is no reason that a good poetic metaphor cannot have two meanings, right? It can be understood as describing the relationship between God and the Jewish people. It can be describing relationship of God and the individual Jew. I'm okay with that, right? It could be both. I'm totally okay with that. Shlomo was a smart man, right? Smartest of men, you know, and if they can do it in the Fairy Queen, they can do it in Shir HaShirim, okay?
Are there camps of only this one and your one is wrong?
What?
Are there camps?
I mean, the Mefarshim, like, take directions, whether they thought that it was like, I'm sure some of them thought it was la'afuka the others, but there's no particular reason it can't be both. Okay? That's my personal feeling. I don't know, I don't know.
Who is who in the story?
What? Okay, good. So now let's get to the story a bit. So, the two main characters in, again, there's a lot in Shir Shir, we won't go through everything, but just to sort of orient you, so, who are the two main characters? The Dod and the Raya. Right? The Dod is the male, or God in this story, and the female is the Raya. Okay, so those are our two main characters, the Dod, right, and the Raya. Okay? Those are the two characters, the man, the woman. Fine. Those are our two stories. Those are our two main characters. Okay. Now, a lot of work has been done by people to try to understand what is actually going on. So, there are basically, even within the allegory, right, there are two ways of understanding it. I'm partial to one of them. Some of Farshim basically read it as a series of images, but not necessarily one that tell a story.
I have a question for metaphors.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a series of metaphors that are all about, you know, a man and a woman in love, and, like, the fact that there does seem to be a little bit of, back and forth, and it's hard to find the narrative. Sometimes it's a bit difficult to actually find the exact details of what's going on. It's fine, because it is a series of metaphors, which all are based on the same characters, and therefore they don't find a narrative. There's another camp that says, no, there must be a narrative. There must be a story going on. Now, this camp, the God and Bnei Israel camp, on the Midrashic level, think this is true. Right? No, Midrashic level, meaning on the non-literal, but on the Mashmaut level, right? The Pshat level, whatever. The meaning level, right? The deeper meaning level, because most of the people who think that it's about God and Bnei Israel, or the ones who think it's about God and the individual Jew, they can deal with this notion that it's scattered metaphors. The person who thinks God and Bnei Israel mostly think that it's also historical, right? That this is telling a particular story about God and the Jewish people, and therefore, in the art scroll, you'll see that they'll identify this time period, that time period. The Jews said this in this time period, the Jews said that in that time period, right? Now, if you think, like this second camp, right, that the nature of the meaning of the metaphor is that it's God and Bnei Israel throughout history, then that would lead you to believe, Mimela, that what? That there must be narrative going on in the pshat, right, in the love story, that it's following a progression.
Story, not just a bunch of metaphors.
Correct, because, right, otherwise, you, right, if you assume, like Rashi does, that there's a connection, right, an integral connection,
right,
between the metaphor and the, right, the meaning of the metaphor. So if the meaning of the metaphor follows a chronological narrative,
right,
then it must be that the within the metaphor itself there is some sort of narrative going on. Yeah?
Just a simple reading of Pshat, is there a narrative?
So this is the question, right? Now, the people who are convinced by this have gone back to do this. If you have time over break and your Hebrew is good, or you want to improve your Hebrew, right? Right, Benny Lau has a series on it, short series, like on 929. You know what 929 is? I've mentioned it before. The National Israeli going through Tanakh thing. So I mentioned it before. So in his, if you look up Benny Lau, right? Benny, what?
On the radio.
What?
Did we say radio?
So if you look on, it's on SoundCloud. So it's on their website. It's on. They have a SoundCloud, thing where you can get it. It's on YouTube, right? And basically you can just go through, and he takes you through what he thinks the narrative is. Yoshi Farajun, if you've heard me quote before, has several shiurim online where he goes through the coherent narrative that he sees. That he sees developing in the story and tries to do it. It is, admittedly, it's not so easy to do, right? Like, it is a bit challenging to do it, but it is possible. You know, there are going to be some things that are a bit unclear. This nature of poetry is not always totally clear what's going on. But
in Hebrew, though.
What? But these are in Hebrew. I'm sure you can find people who do it in English, but, like, these are the ones that I've listened to, you know, in the last few years.
I never read Shira Shirim without the...
Yeah, actually, got a swing
word. What?
Where do we find it?
Corin has
it. You can do the GPS.
If we read it, can we, like, follow the story?
Yeah, it's not like terribly hard. I mean, it's just a little bit. It's very like it's very flowery. So it's, you know, you get caught up in images. Okay. So I'm just trying to think of So I'm trying to think of how to best. Okay. So I want to again, I want to set you up with Shira Shirim. We'll see how much we actually get into it. Another point. This is something that Rabbi Etchalom points out in a Shira you can listen to. He notes, and this makes sense that. He thinks that one of the things that is important about the images in Shir HaShirim, right? It's about, you know, the Dod and the Raya running through fields and expressing their love and blah, blah, blah. He notes that a lot of the places that get mentioned are...
real places.
Well, they are real places, like Yerushalayim and Gedi. Are images about Israel. Right, and he thinks that at some level that's part of the story also, that Shir HaShirim, on a pshat level, is also a story, like a love story to the land, right, which is sort of a, you know, subsection of this, right, meaning it's not sort of, it's not, I mean, this, to put it the most simple way, it is not accidental that a metaphorical story about the relationship of God and the Jewish people throughout Israel takes place on the background of the beauty of the physical land of Eretz Israel. Right, that's not right. That's not a crazy thing. So when you're paying attention, Aleph Yud, Eretz Israel, Eretz Israel, happy, fine.
I was just so confused.
So Eretz Israel, and that's I think another thing to keep in mind as you go through the metaphors. Right, is that the image? Right, they're not accidental. Right, this is what I want. Right, going back to Rashi's point. Right, it is you want to understand the pshat. Right, you don't want to jump to the metaphor, right? If you jump and said it's about God and the Jewish people, and forgot that this beautiful love story takes place on the background of Eretz Israel, you'd forget that part of the message is that our relationship manifests itself in its deepest sense as a nation in our land,
right?
Which is obvious, right? But it makes sense that Shir HaShirim, therefore, should take place in such a setting. Right, that actually makes sense, and therefore you should look for those images. Right, that's something that should deepen your appreciation of the book. Okay, so that's another point that I think is worth noting about the book in terms of understanding it. Another thing that's worth noting is that this is something that Yoshi Farajun develops in his analysis is that there are random moments where there does seem to be the nimshal peeking through. And you should look for those moments because those moments are some of the things that remind you that this is not a, right, this is not just a love story, but it is a...
metaphor.
Yeah, but it is a metaphor. And he challenges you to look for those moments throughout the book where that seems to pop out. Yeah.
What's the third level that you mentioned in the beginning?
Oh, pshat.
One,
that is a level.
No, this is metaphor level one, okay?
Metaphor level one.
I see. Okay, okay.
Yeah. I mean, these are the metaphorical levels. There's two levels within the metaphor. Okay. Those are just, like I said, those are just introductory points that will help you understand Shir HaShirim, what you're looking for in the book, what exactly it is it's doing. I will note, right, that it is worth saying, this is something I heard from Zev Meir Friedman, right, RZMF, many years ago, is that the Gemara, and I think this is a good way of capturing Shir HaShirim, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin Daf Kaf Aleph, that Hakori Pasuk Shir HaShirim, also some Kamen Zemer, Right? If you read a pasuk from Shir Hashirim and you make it into a song, so Atarcha Gerasat for Meres from Nekadosh Baruch Hu, right? Asuni Banecha Kichinah Shemanagim Baleitzim, etc., etc., etc. Now, what? The Torah puts on sackcloth and says to God, "Why are your children treating me like a fool's harp?"
Right? Or, make it into a song.
Yes.
Correct. Now, there's a machlok as we showed him about whether this is all psukim or just Shira Shirim. Now, Ray Freeman pointed out what?
Yeah. I know Raj is a Billy Shirim. I thought only the Yad Ramah said it was Shira Shirim, then he retracted on it.
No. No, it is also implied in several other sources. But the one that Ray Freeman pointed out is the one in the Kala Rabasi, right? Where in Kala Rabasi, I think it's Rava, says, because then it will be turned into Znus. What Rafin pointed out is, yes, because Shir HaShirim, of all of them, if you turn into a song and don't have the right Kavana, the alternative isn't just zero. It's now a very detailed, lustful song without meaning. Okay? One last point, and then maybe we'll just spend a few minutes going through it, is the point that the Nesivos makes in his Hagdama. The Nesivos, you know, like on Choshen Mishpat, Sivas HaMishpat, right, whose name was Rabbi Yaakov Leuberbaum. Yaakov, and his father's name was Yaakov Leuberbaum. He's Yaakov ben Yaakov. Yaakov ben Yaakov Leuberbaum, right? The Nesiva says Akdama, and he points out there that, and this is pointed, you know, he sort of says this in short form, there's a lot of people point this out in long form, it isn't accidental that the most intimate relationship of God is described, or is describable, even at the level of metaphor, of the relationship with human beings and God, right? Which tells you that there is a corollary, meaning that the relationship between a husband and a wife, a man and a woman, has potential holiness. Otherwise, this would not be a good metaphor, right? They would be totally dissociated, right? It works both ways.
Now, it works both ways, right? Meaning, it depends
on metaphors. No, so his point is, it's not dirty, right? Clearly, it's holy, or we wouldn't, right? If it was actually negative, objectively, like husband, wife, you know, people being in love, right? That's a wrong metaphor for God, right? We don't, like, talk about, the metaphor of God in Jewish people is, you know, the Avodah Zarah, or dogs mating in the
if my thing was, B'nai Yisrael, you know, worships God as well as, you know, the Satanists worship Satan. It's not like the metaphor could still work
the metaphor could work. Like, Shlomo HaMelech would not have chosen that metaphor as the worthy metaphor, right? He didn't write a book that went into Tanakh of Satanists worshiping Satan as the mashal for God, for Jews worshiping God. He chose love, right? He chose the relationship between husband and wife, from which he proves that there is inherent Kedusha in that relationship, and therefore there is...
And why is it so complicated?
I don't know if this proves that.
I really think it does.
Man loves his wife.
What?
If all trying to show that God loves Mei Yisrael as much as man loves his wife, don't think you need it for the metaphor to work.
No, but that's not, what it means. That's not what Shir HaShirim is about at all.
You just told me that.
No, I did not. I said it's about the relationship. It's not about...
Relationship of...
Man. No.
It's even less. All the relationship.
No, it's about... No, but we chose this one. I understand. We chose the relationship of man and woman as the worthy metaphor. I think everybody else understood that point. I don't know why you didn't.
No, it's
right?
Not, because it's like saying that.
I'm just going to move on. I'm just moving on. No, Ellie, I'm just moving on. Right? The fact that God is so okay with this, right? Meaning, and throughout Tanakh, we describe God's relationship with the Jewish people as one of a husband and wife, means that there is a sanctity in it, in which case, knowing something about love, right, will give you insight into the relationship you're supposed to have with God, right? And vice versa, that's what I said, right? And the Kabbalists are very into this notion, right? And this is very popular in modern Hasidus, which is that, right, you can't fully understand your relationship with God until you're married, because you need to be able to intimately understand intimacy, right? In order, right? And, what? I think it definitely adds a dimension, right? I think, right, understanding intimacy helps you understand, right? Look, there is no denying, right? I think there's no denying that until one has experienced parenthood, it is hard to capture right, or to feel what Tanakh is capturing when it describes the relationship of God to the Jewish people as a parent to a child. I think that's true. Right? Meaning, you can say that you understand that that parents love their children no matter what. Right? And that it's inalienable. You can use those words. But until you feel that, you don't quite understand what the metaphor of God being described as a parent is trying to capture in Tanakh. And I think the same thing is true here. Until you have experienced, right, sort of the ecstasy of intimate love, right, then yeah, you can't fully understand, right, what it... And I think this actually makes sense, right? Your experiences in life that you're supposed to go through are supposed to help you understand your relationship with God. Meaning, every experience you have in life is supposed to aid you in understanding God. So yes, I think it would be a problem if we didn't think this was true. Right? Meaning, if we didn't think that having children, building a family, being married, were aiding you in understanding your relationship with God, right? I mean, you could say that there's practical, right? But there's something, I think, powerful about the fact that Tanakh goes out of its way to describe the relationship we have with God with relationships, and as you experience those relationships throughout life, you understand God more, right? You understand your relationship with God more. I think that's totally reasonable. That doesn't preclude the possibility that there will be a Yechidei Segula that could do it without, right? I'm not saying it's impossible, but the average person is not true, right? The average person will understand the metaphor more having experienced the... right, non-metaphorical one, right? Meaning actually having children will help you understand what it means to be God's child and what it means for God to be your parent, right? I think it's just reality, right? Yeah, there may be a Yechidei Segula like Ellie who will say, I don't buy this, right? It's all about or Morty, and Gersley will just say, no.
It's all about philosophical values.
Wait, did you have any other chicken?
No.
He's a vegetarian.
I'm a vegetarian, so no.
No, well, this is disappointing.
Yes.
Wait. I didn't argue that it wouldn't help you understand it more. So
it
doesn't necessarily have to be a
cut-off thing. No, it clearly is.
Rabbi, you can't tell a mom when you have to keep going.
Only some people are carried over.
So this works both ways.
What?
For every quality, it wouldn't be a metaphor anymore.
Yes. Why? Where have you been?
Anyways, what were you saying?
You said it works both that way, when you're married, helps you understand God and vice versa. How would that work vice versa?
It's because once you become capable, right, the intimacy you're supposed to feel with God is even higher, but as you experience that, right, yes, it can help you feel that within your marriage also, right, meaning, right, they are meant to be similar emotions, so yeah, they
it's like
can.
Knowing how God helps you love your wife.
Yeah, it can do that, yeah. Okay, I think so. Okay, so now, these are like basic contours of the book. If you want to now just go sort of through the basics and maybe try to get a little bit of what the narrative is. So Perek Aleph, right, is the sort of initial... Okay, may I make one more point? Rav Moshe Lichtenstein likes pointing out that if you want to understand the metaphors, part of it is you have to realize that the Dode consistently, at the beginning, uses artificial metaphor. Not in the sense of fake, but in what it actually means, artifice, right? Meaning in the sense of human-created metaphor, right? Buildings and things like that. And the Raya use unconstrained natural metaphor, which Rav Moshe takes as part of the narrative being that God, who's the Dode, right? He sort of thinks about it in terms of like the history of the world, right? There first was primitive man who experienced nature, right? Didn't yet control it. And as humanity matured, they learned how to control nature. Right, so he reads as part of the story is that God is already from the beginning talking in sort of mature metaphor, and the Raya is not. Right, that's part of the story that the Raya is, you know,
it
has to learn. Right, meaning at the beginning she's just like unbridled, right? She's like a child, right? Like childish love, and the Dode is more mature, and she's trying to reach his maturity. Right, and part of it is watching her metaphors change as you go through. Okay, so if we go through just a little bit. The first perek, it starts off right with this right off the way, right? Yishakenu mishikorpio ki tovim dodecha miyayin, right? Give me the kisses of your mouth, for your love is more delightful than wine. The rech shmenecha tovim shaman terak shemecha akein alei mod ayevucha. What?
That's
Yes. Your aymens yield a sweet fragrance. Your name is like finest oil. Therefore, do maidens love you? And then you get, right, so this is the
spangles of silver.
I'm so happy. Okay, look, so basically the narrative starts off with these initial conversations between the Dode and the Raya. The Raya is uncomfortable. She doesn't yet want the Dode to look at her. She's shy. She's sunburnt, right? In Pasuk Va, right, she's right, sun, really burnt, right? Like burnt, right?
The sun is
clear. No. Yeah, it's no, but she's the Vasni Hashemesh. She's Shchoran, she's the Vasni Hashemesh.
I'm completely joking.
Okay. Anyways. Okay, so basically, guys. So the first perek is basically this initial interactions, and here in the first perek, they are planning their meeting, right? But they haven't yet met, right? So you get, the Raya wants to find the Dode, the woman wants to find the man, and he tells her, Imlo tedilach hayafa banashim, tzilach bikvei hatzon, uriyed gidiotayach hamishkanot arayim. You don't know where I am, so follow the sheep. Right? Like, you know, there's this evasiveness. Right? At the beginning, they're trying to get their relationship, but there's, right, they're courting each other from a distance. That's sort of Perek Aleph. In Perek Bet, they continue, again, I'm not going to do the whole narrative, but just to give you an idea of what it would be like to read it as a cohesive story. Now, there are other characters, by the way, and that's one of the things you have to realize, that throughout it, in addition to the Dode and Raya, there are people who sometimes try to stop or help the Dode and the Raya meet each other, right? There are Benot Yerushalayim, and there are Shomrim, right? So there is this story. So at the beginning, right, they try to see each other, but it's from a distance. They're not, right, they're not yet,
together.
Yes, they haven't yet met in any sort of serious way. And then, you know, you get in the middle of Perek Bet, the Raya adjuring the Benot Yerushalayim to bringing their help in to help her express this love when the time comes. In Perek Bet, in the middle, again, you get the Dode, beckoning to the Raya, right? This time, not just saying, you know, you could find the sheep. But Anadudiva Marli Kumi Lech Rayati Yafati Ulchilach, right? Come away, right? There's sort of an invitation, right, to actually come and meet. But they still don't actually meet, because you get in Pasuk Yudalid, Yonati Bechagvei Asela B'Sitra Madrega, right? He says, like, you're hidden in the cliff. Hashmiini et kolechilech arev marech nava, let me hear your voice, right? Let me see you. Meaning he's inviting her in, but she's still hiding. Right? There's this and the Raya in Pasuk Tetzayin says, Dodi Livani Lora Bashoshanim. Right? She expresses her love, but she's not quite ready to actually meet him. Right, Ashiafua Chayom, she's like, okay, I'll meet you, but later on in the day, right? So at first there's just sort of like initial conversations, and then there's an invitation, and there's a little bit of reticence from the woman saying, okay, I will meet you, but, you know, give it, you know, maybe later in the day, right? You can sort of see how a narrative will develop here, right? Where, how it could work. Again, to get through all the details will take us longer, but I just want to give you, then in Perek Gimel, The Dode, right, she said, I'm waiting till night, so Perek Gimel is the night where she starts pursuing him, and she says, Al Mishkavi Balilot, Pikashti Edshavanavshi, Pikashti Velomitzativ, right, it came time at night, and I couldn't find him. So what do you have in the narrative now? At first, neither of them were willing to meet. They were just like pursuing each other. Then he invites her. She says, "I'll come tonight." Nighttime comes, and she looks for him. And he's nowhere to be found. Right now, you can understand why at the midrashic level. And again, I'm not going through everything, but I want you to understand how the mashal will help you with the nimshal. Right? There are different periods in Jewish history. There are times where we're not yet intimate with God. Then there are times where God extends it and we're not ready to accept His invitation. And then there are the times when we're ready to find God and God has pulled back.
And
right?
The greatest thing is at night. Obviously, usually night refers to when.
And night is, again, metaphorically,
it's bad times.
Right? It's so bad times, right? It's Hester Punim, right? Whatever it is. But you can understand how the story would be. Sometimes we look for God.
Not let us reach out. Like, you're just only right after we sin. At night.
Yeah, Hester Panim, Galut, right? Whatever you want to take it, right? But you understand how there is this narrative, progression going on, right? Now she actively pursues him, right? She says, She looks, she asks the Shomrim, have you seen the one I love? Right? She begs them, like, tell me where my loved one is if you see him, etc. Okay, then in Perek Dalid, you get the dote again, saying, Hinach yafa rayati, hinach yafa inach yonim. Right, again, the dote is praising the beauty of the raya. And then if you skip to Pasuk Yud Beis in Perek Dalid, you see, Gan na'ul achoti kala gan ul mayan chatum. Right, my garden is locked. Right, my bride is a garden locked. Right, which is right in a sexual image. Right, is right often it sounds something like, right, meaning like maybe I can be close to her, but I can't sleep with her. Right, there's like, you know, there's this image of a closed garden. Right, like protecting her virginity or something like that. Meaning he wants to be with her, but there is a reticence, at least, of her allowing him into. Right? Into the inner spheres, right? Even if they're willing to have some relationship, she's not ready to be intimate with him, right? There's this, again, push and pull of it. And then in Perakeh, you actually get him, Bati Legani, Achoti Kala, right? He actually enters and he says, right, I'm here. And that's the famous moment. And what happens? God is actually willing to extend his hand, right? The dode? And she says, Ani Sheina. Vilibi air. I'm sleeping, but my heart is awake. Kol dodi dofek. Right, I hear his voice. Pitchili. Right, achoti, rayati, yonati, tamati, shiroshinim, batal. It's a beautiful image. Right? Yeah, I know.
It's the problem, Gordon's
tomorrow. Except this song is actually, I happen to think that this song is a very good interpretation. Right, the tune. It's also, okay, if you have the tune in your head. Right, so imagine the moment, right? The first four prakim of Shir HaShirim have been going back and forth, right? Each time, neither of them is ready for the intimacy, right? And then finally, the dode, God, extends his hand and says, okay, I'm coming. It's the middle of the night, and he's knocking on the door, and she's awake. And what does she do? And she says, she hears him saying, Pitchili, Achoti, Rayati, Yonati, Tamati, right? All the images. What does he say? My sister, why sister?
Yeah,
it's so
weird, yeah.
No, it's not weird. Why is it my sister?
I don't know.
Because I love you so much, it's as if, right, we were always related. Right, achoti. Right, this is, right, the difference between siblings and a spouse is a chosen relationship. It's as if it's not chosen. Right? You're both achoti kalati. Right? You're achoti rayati. Right? You are my beloved. But it's as if we're siblings, meaning, right, I can't imagine, it's not like, it's as if I didn't choose you, right, as if you're like my sister, but you're not, you're my beloved, I did choose you, right, Yonati, Tamati, right, my dove, my perfect one, right, Sheroshinim Latal, my head is drenched with dew, Kibbutzot Tavros Yitzei Laila, right, my locks with the damp of night, right, it's the middle of the night, right, the dew, right, that chill is in the air, right, he's knocking, and what does she say? What does she say?
I can't get up.
Yeah, Pashati et Kutante. I'm already in pajamas. I can't come to the door. Rechasi et Ragli. I took off my. Right? I've already taken a bath. Right? When I should be dirty again. What do you want from my life? Right?
It's terrible.
But then the image is heartbreaking, because how long does she hesitate? 2 minutes. Right? Because what happens? The next thing is, he even got his hand in. Right? Like he sticks it in through like the knocker. Right? There's like a little, I don't know, right? A little door by the, you know, she sees his hand like sticking in through the window. Right? And at that point, she says, oh, I really do want to be with him. Come to Yani, liftoach ledodi, v'yadi, not fumar. V'tzvatayim arovera kapot amanul. So I run, right? So she runs. Her hands are dripping with myrrh, with right fragrances, with perfume essentially, right? Patach Yani ledodi, v'dodi chamak avar. I open the door and he's already gone. Right? Right, it's this terrible, terrible image, and it goes on. Right, bikashti v'lo mitzatiu. I looked, I couldn't find him. Karati v'lo anani. I call him out, he doesn't answer me. And now what happens? She finds the shomrim again. Right, the ones who before she said, "Help me find my beloved." And what happens? This time they find her. Misoni shomrim esuvim ba'ir hikuni fitzun. They start beating her. Right, yeah. Right now she's looking for God, and instead, right, she's willing to get him, but. Now, exactly, and she makes the B'nai Yerushalayim swear that they find him, and now she bursts into this praise, Madodech Midot, oh my God, you're so beautiful, right? Like she reflects on what she's lost, right? That's the end of Perek Hey, and Perek Vav, the outsiders say to her, start entering the conversation and say, Ana halach dodecha yafa ben Hashem, where did your beloved go, right? What happened? And they have mercy on her, and they say, okay, let's help you find him, and they start recognizing her beauty, right? Meaning, right, you see how in the image, in the metaphor, it makes sense, right? When she starts looking for God, the outsiders start to see her beauty, right? You understand how metaphorically that would work, right? When we start looking for God, the nations will appreciate us, right? You understand how this would work.
That'd be a really good book.
Oh, it really is quite... I will leave you with this, okay? The hardest question in the book is, right, the hardest question to answer in the book is whether in the end they actually ever get together. It's not clear, right? There is a certain logic to the narrative, but what's not totally clear in the metaphor is whether they actually ever get together, right? And that's the question that people sort of struggle with. But like I said, I'm not giving you an extensive one, but I hope I've given you just a little bit of a taste of what it would mean to try to follow a coherent narrative, right? And exactly how you parse it is not the point. But the things that you really look at, and this is what the Rav develops in Vikashti Misham, is that the image of Shir HaShirim is meant to remind you that the relationship of God and the Jewish people, or God and the individual, is one of ebb and flow, right? It's not... Right, a straight narrative. Right, even if you read the straight narrative, it's sometimes right. God reaches in, we don't reach back. Sometimes, right, we reach in and God isn't willing to accept it. Right, meaning there is this right. Come close, go far. Come close, go far. And that's part of the complexity of the relationship here. Right, and it's part of the relationship that we have with God. So again, the points I think are worth thinking about in Shir HaShirim, even without getting down to the nitty-gritty, are right the three levels: the pshat, God and the individual Jew, and God and B'nai Israel. The fact that it takes place in the background of Eretz Yisrael, which makes sense, it's an intimate story of the Jewish people. That the fact that it uses love is meant to tell you at some level that this is something holy, and experiencing a relationship between a husband and wife helps you understand the intimacy of the relationship with God. And then the point that following the second level metaphor people, namely, this is a historical understanding of God and the Jewish people, that means that there must be a coherent narrative running through the book, right? Again, how you parse it, you have to spend more time on it, but just to give you right, that basic idea that it starts with them distant and slowly gets closer and right alternates between right the Dod being willing to have the relationship with the Raya, right, there being consequences to not jumping at the relationship and the like, right, that makes sense in the metaphor, right, and it makes sense in the Nimshal as well. And again, there's a lot more to do in Shir HaShirim, but that should at least give you a petach as you're reading Shir HaShirim. Maybe you can try to have your own shot in how the metaphor works and how the Nimshal works, but at least those are sort of introductions to the issues that come up.